Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it's 7 p.m. It's Sunday night. That means it's time for another episode of Stunt Tracks with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one and only Leslie Hoffman. Tonight we're going to be talking about the Prime Directive on Star Trek. Interesting conversation. Is it good? Is it bad? Does it work? Does it not work? We're going to dive right into that. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you'd like to give us a call and share your opinion on the Prime Directive, please do so. We'd absolutely love to hear from you, and we will be with you live for the next hour. So please, settle down, get comfortable, and give us a call, 646-668-2433. We're talking about the Prime Directive from Star Trek. So, Leslie, what's going on up in Saranac Lake? Anything exciting?
Actually, I think spring is finally, it's attempting to come here. We've had several good days. I mean, it gets cold at night, but the days have actually been very nice, and no snow. Yay, no snow!
Yes,
so,
very nice down
no,
here.
It's
been beautiful
ahead.
Here in Vermont. It was in the 60s today, absolutely gorgeous. And it does get cold at night. And it's chilly in the morning, and there's frost on the windshield. You got to scrape it. But it burns off by the afternoon.
Right.
Good.
Well, that's luckily for me, if I do have to travel out, it isn't until mid-morning or noon, you know. I haven't had a really early doctor's appointment, so, you know, you're saying you're scraping the frost off. Usually by the time I'm out to the car, it's melted off anyways.
And I guess the good news is that now you can take your snow tires off your car safely, I would think.
What? You know, that's the whole dangerous thing or the guessing game about snow tires and the Adirondacks is that I think one year I took the snow tires off and, of course, it snowed the next week. Then again, having the snow tires on the car and driving on bare asphalt, the sound is just, well, I wear hearing aids and the sound is just, I mean, it's like a machine gun going off in my head. I don't know how loud snow tires sound to you, but it's a really loud sound.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet to take the snow tires off, I think. I mean,
yeah.
I remember having a big, big snowstorm on St. Patrick's Day once. But I don't remember ever having, you know, significant snow past St. Patrick's Day that I can recall. I might be wrong, but not my memory.
Well, I remember as a teenager, we actually did, school must have been out, but we did a 4th of July parade in a town that's about 20 minutes away from us. Like I say, 4th of July, it snowed on us.
Wow. Well.
So you just, like I say, you just never know. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the, maybe you even have this, the saying, it's 11 months of snow and 1 month of mud.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, my dog, I had to have surgery on my dog's ACL muscle there, and we were supposed to be taking her out and walking her for 5 minutes a day, four times a day to strengthen up her leg, and we had so much ice and snow that I really couldn't get her out and safely walk her, because if she slips on the ice, she could tear the stitches and cause more damage.
Yeah.
So, you know, we haven't been able to walk her. And now that the snow is all gone and it's nice out, we've been walking her quite a bit. And she's really starting to get her strength back. She's starting to walk better. So I'm hoping by camp she'll have full use of her leg and I can get out on the trails and walk with her out in the woods, because we enjoy doing that.
Oh, that's good. So it was only one leg that had to tear.
Yeah, just the right rear leg.
Uh-huh.
They fixed it up, and she's doing much, much better now. In fact, she's laying here right
next to me. Oh,
that's
good.
Never leaves my side. And once all this COVID stuff is over and camp opens up, you'll have to come up to camp. We'll have a barbecue, and you can meet Emma, and we can just hang out and have a good time.
Sounds good to me. Well, it's like I say, it's I don't know. It's still, I consider it still winter, even though we've had a really nice week last week. Supposedly this coming week is supposed to be really nice. But when I see the snow completely off the ground, well, there might be snow in the woods, but when I see the snow completely off the lawn, then I might believe that it's over.
Right.
Well, like looking on Facebook where everyone's saying it's the first day of spring, that might be not. Well, okay, here's a memory I have, is that for Easter, you know, if you're in Los Angeles or wherever, you got tulips and crocuses coming out of the ground. What I remember as a child for Easter, we used to go to the flower shops, to the hothouses, and we would walk around the hothouses looking at the plants, because, believe me, the plants were not growing out of the ground yet.
No, not up where you're at, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to be talking about Prime Directive tonight. You ready to dive right in? Some Prime Directive talk?
Yeah, sure.
So for those of you who aren't aware of the Prime Directive or what it is, and, you know, are Leslie and I just old and crazy and made it up? No, the Prime Directive has been a part of Star Trek since Gene Roddenberry created it in the 60s. And the Prime Directive is also known as Starfleet General Order 1. General Order 1 and the Non-Interferer Directive is a guiding principle of Starfleet, prohibiting its members from interfering with the internal and natural development of alien civilizations. The Prime Directive applies particularly to civilizations which are below a certain threshold of technological, scientific, and cultural development, preventing starship crews from using their superior technology to impose their own values or ideals upon them. Since its introduction in the first season of Star Trek The Original Series, it has served as the plot focus of numerous episodes of the various Star Trek series. So basically, yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And,
right.
Let's...
Well, you know, it kind of brings up also the whole theory about first contact. I mean, you sort of touched on it, is that they didn't want to do first contact unless they felt a planet or civilization was, what should I say, up to par with space travel, technology, whatever. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been an episode in any of the Star Treks where they've gone to a planet that they thought might have been up to technology and then discovered that no, they're still way, way behind. But then that means that they made the first contact. These people beam down to a planet or something, and it's like, oh, hi. Oh, you're not that smart yet. You know, so anyways, I shouldn't say that you're not that smart yet. It's that your civilization hasn't developed into space travel and, well, exactly what you already said. But yes, you explained Prime Directive. I want to start off saying I love Star Trek. I mean, it's like, well, even when I was working on the set, you know that I had questions about the script, and they used to jokingly tell me to shut up, you know. It's because the script says so. So I'm not attacking the original series, but I started going through the episodes of the original series, and I mean, Kirk just, I don't know, there's the Prime Directive, but he made his own decisions. So going quickly off, I mean, I remember these episodes. I'll start off with the return of the Archons. Turned out that a computer was running a society, and I mean, there was a man called Landru, but before he died, he programmed a computer to supposedly run the society. Well, Kirk finds this out, and he makes the computer blow up. You know, it's one of those, you try to talk logic to a computer, and you drive the computer nuts, and it blows up. It's almost like driving a starship.
Yep.
But, you know, so he convinces this computer, or he talks the computer into blowing up, and basically the end of the episode is he promises that he's going to send educators to this planet from the Federation. Well, I mean, so the question again with Prime Directive is, this society was working, should I say perfectly, or it was working with this computer, and Kirk took it upon himself to blow up the computer. So I mean, was he right to do that?
Well, I also think, Leslie, I haven't seen this episode in a long time, but it's one of my favorites. It's the one that had the giant Jawas from Star Wars, and they walked around with giant tubes and shot people.
Right.
But if I remember correctly, wasn't the USS Archon a Federation starship that crashed on this planet like 100 years ago? And this was the first time that Starfleet had visited the planet, and they found that this missing ship had caused all this trouble. Was that the backstory of the episode?
I'm not sure. It might have been. And that's a prop. That is, as we go through the episodes, we're going to see that over and over again, that planets were visited by the Federation, and they thought they were doing good, and basically Well, they must have been following or supposed to be following the primary directive as well, but they interfered, whether it was Kirk. So the question becomes, does two wrongs make a right? I mean, by destroying the computer and now the people have to think for themselves, was that correcting a problem or you know, the story ends at the point that they're leaving these people in total confusion, saying we're going to send some people to help you. Well, what are these people going to do while they're waiting for other Federation people to show up?
Star Trek, unfortunately, Star Trek did that a lot. They'd have an episode, they'd wrap it all up, they'd fly to the Enterprise, and they'd just fly away and leave these people on this planet and never come back to them again and just fly away, and that's the end of it. So they did that quite frequently, matter of fact. And this is one of those episodes. Well, no, actually, no. Wait, I correct myself. We do know what happened to these people because Lower Decks went back to that planet. Yeah.
Book or something?
No, Star Trek Lower Decks, the cartoon. They went back to them.
Wait a minute, no. Yeah.
And Captain Freeman was saying to Landru, don't make me Ultra Paradox your ass out of existence again, Mr. Computer. Remember that episode? They did go back to that on the animated Lower Decks episode, which was really funny.
You know, like I say, I'm not necessarily up on the novels or the cartoons of them revisiting an episode. I'm just sticking to the original episode. But okay, I'm willing to believe anything.
Did he have the right to do that? I mean, was that his decision to make? I guess that's the question.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, you know, it could have gone either way. Is that, you know, one that I just realized that I left out, And of course, my favorite episode is Space Seed, is that, you know, here's these genetically altered supermen that I hate to see them in prison, but I don't know where they should have belonged, but Kirk drops them off on a barbarian planet. So, in other words, there's a civilization on a planet, and he drops these supermen off on this planet to try to take over these barbarians. Now, isn't that a violation of the Prime Directive? I mean, that planet was developing on its own, and all of a sudden you put Khan on the planet.
I think that Captain Kirk, I think, might have been, in the words of Mr. Spock, into cowboy diplomacy. And I think Captain Kirk may have broken the Prime Directive more than any other captain on any other show, I think, in my mind.
I
think he has.
Well, again,
absolutely.
You know, here I'll give the excuses. You know, they were trying to create this new sci-fi television show and all that, but it just seems like a lot of the scripts went against. You know, here they talk about this wonderful Prime Directive, and then they go right against the Prime Directive. The next episode is A Taste of Armageddon, which, again, is two warring planets they want the war, but they don't really want to fight the war. So it's like sink your battleship. You know, they basically, the computer sends out a blast, well, and then, how do I say it? You can't call it an invisible blast, or it's like playing chess. In other words, the computer does something, it's it. Then the other computer or the two computers decide, okay, 600 people died, and now 600 people on whatever planet that got hit has to walk into, I forget what they called that chamber, but, you know, they have to walk into the chamber and get disintegrated. So,
yeah.
I mean, again, Kirk decides to intervene, and he destroys, I think Spock pointed out, which was like the mainframe computer, and Kirk destroy the mainframe computer, and now it's up to these two different planets that they either gotta, you know, start talking negotiations and peace, or the other choice is they're back to a bloody war. I mean, they're really gonna have to kill people. They just can't decide that the computer says, okay, 600 people are going to walk into the disintegration chamber. So again,
yep.
You know, like I say, some of these things are really iffy. I mean, I guess it was good that he destroyed the computer and forced these people into negotiations. But the prime directive is you're not supposed to be, you know, messing around with civilizations. So, you know, which way do you go? And then another computer one was the Apple, where these people were, what should I say? They were like the Amazon type people. I mean, it turned out again that it was a computer inside this rock thing that looked like a dragon, and they would bring offerings, and this computer was able to take care of the weather. The weather was always nice. There was always food for these people, and once again, Kirk destroys Val, and they leave the planet. After they destroy the computer, now there's regular weather happening. Now these people have to grow things, which they don't know how to do. And Kirk leaves the planet.
Yep.
You remember that
That's
one?
Typical Kirk. Typical Kirk.
Right. Okay, this one's kind of interesting is... And I was when we were talking about cat suits, I was talking about Julie Newmar as Catwoman on Batman. I mean, holy schmully, that woman was built. But in Friday's Child, she's pregnant, and she's the wife of the head of the tribe. And one of the, well, it's that the Federation and the Klingons are fighting for mineral rights. And the Klingon made it to the planet before the Federation did. He convinced a person of the tribe to kill the leader of the tribe. Now, killing the leader of the tribe, his pregnant wife should have been killed too, which she was willing to be put to death. That is how that planet ran. But Kirk saves her. Bones helps deliver the baby. I'm a doctor, not an escalator.
Yep.
And the Federation ends up getting the mining rights, and the baby is named Leonard James Akaar. You remember that?
Yes, I do. I do indeed. So listen, guys, we have to take our first commercial break here for our listeners at Odyssey Radio. Don't touch your dial. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very quick commercial break.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking. Boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back. You're back with Stunt Treks with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one and only Leslie Hoffman. And we're talking about the Prime Directive on Star Trek. And right now we're talking about Friday's Child. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. Yeah, Leslie, so they saved the child. And I guess in that case, the Federation let it slide because they got the mining rights to the planet. So all will be forgiven.
Right. She became, I can only think of the word guardian, but there is a name. I know, like in England, when there was like a child next in line, they would name, and I can't think of the right word, they would name someone to watch over that child until they were old enough to, you know, the child really was the head person. But obviously they couldn't make decisions yet, so it was the person taking care of the child that would make the decision. And you know, as you say, the Federation got the mining rights. She became friends or was the, what should I call it, intermediary. I mean, again, you have these episodes ending, and you don't know what happens. So another episode is Private Little War, which this is where there were the townsfolks and the hills folks. There was special, I mean, that's how they distinguished them. It's the episode with the white gorilla with the spikes going down his back.
The Mugatu.
Right. Yep. So the once again, the Klingons have already shown up on the planet. They've gone to the townsfolk, and instead of giving them, like, advanced phasers, they're giving them, like, flintlock rifles, which is still much more than what the Hill folks had. So the way Kirk handles that one is he feels that he's going to arm the Hill people with rifles, no better than what the town folks had, but he still is giving the rifles to the Hill folks. And again, the episode ends. So I guess he feels he's maintaining a balance of power, but is that truly the Prime Directive? You're not supposed to be interfering, but the Klingons had already interfered, so if I interfere even more, does that make it okay? Do two wrongs make a right?
And we know the Klingons don't have a Prime Directive because they don't care.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing. And just going back to First Contact, you know, in the movie when the Vulcans come to Earth, we don't know if the Vulcans really have a Prime Directive or if they just wanted to do First Contact. So one is different from the other.
Well, I think the Vulcans, I think that's an interesting topic, Leslie, because on Star Trek Enterprise, the Vulcans have been on Earth presumably ever since that First Contact movie. The Vulcans aren't really being too helpful towards the Federation and towards the humans in Starfleet at all, on Star Trek Enterprise anyways. And they're reluctant to give up any information, and they don't want to really help too much at all. So maybe the Vulcans kind of have their version of the Prime Directive, but I don't think it's nowhere near as strong as what the Federation has.
Uh-huh.
Or has.
Yeah, so, again, I mean, I guess everyone could look at these episodes and all different... I feel like repeating myself again. I love these episodes. I have no problem with the episodes. I just raised this question about the Prime Directive. So another episode is a piece of the action. Now, in this case, and you kind of said Return of the Archons, in a piece of the action, this Federation ship came to a planet, and they had a book on 1930 gangsters. So when the Enterprise shows up there, this planet is, you know, you're having gangland wars. You have the north side and east side, west side, you know, and everybody wants to be the big boss. And finally, well, now this is interesting because, you know, they had machine guns or Tommy guns. So you get to right to the end of the episode. Kirk has the Enterprise stun two of these gangs that are shooting at each other. He uses the Enterprise and stuns these guys, and the bosses who are in the room with Kirk sees that Kirk could, you know, really just take over the whole planet, and so they want to make a deal, and the deal is that, I forget the number, but it was like, this person will be in charge, this one's going to be second in command, and they're going to give a piece of the action to the Federation, which was kind of funny, because right at the very end, Spock does ask, how are you going to explain this to the Federation? You know that this planet is going to give us money. I mean, and Kirk explains it away. I think he says, we'll put it in a fund to help teach these people. But that, again,
now,
that's
at the
a
end of that
violation
episode,
of the Prime Directive.
Didn't McCoy say that he lost his communicator?
Right, and I don't know, Kirk kind of makes it a joke. He says, who knows, you know, in a couple of years, they may want a piece of our action. That was
yep,
that was the tagline to that episode.
And they never went back. We don't know what happened on that planet or anything. They just flew away and left them in the dark.
Yep. So another episode, like a piece of the action, is Patterns of Force, which is where this captain, well, they beam down to a planet. Turns out that there's a disease, and if you beam off the planet right away, you're going to die. What they don't know, or what this captain, I'm jumping, wrong one. Piece of the action is that a person came to this planet and he felt that the planet needed help. And he used the story of the Nazi regime that they were this small, bankrupt country. We're talking about World War One now. After World War One, Germany was bankrupt. They were ruined. But then the Nazi regime came in with Hitler, and I mean they almost. I'm talking about real history now. Had they invented the bomb first, they could have won the war. In fact, they kind of touch on that in City on the Edge of Forever, is that if Edith Keller had been allowed to live, she would have had a peace movement, which would have allowed Germany to make the bomb first, and that would have been the end of the Earth we knew. But going back to patterns of force, is that so? This guy thinks that if he teaches this planet about the Nazi regime and how Germany came back from being totally bankrupt, totally destroyed, to almost taking over the world. He uses that as an example. And there are two planets. And so one group is the Nazis. The other one, I feel like, was supposed to be Jewish people. And the Nazis are killing these people from the other planet. What happens is one of the I can't think of his name, but one of the people from the Nazi regime drugs the Federation man, and he just starts making decisions, or he has this drug body sitting in a chair where the microphone is covering the guy's mouth, and he's telling the rest of the Nazi people, you know, we need to go attack this planet and we need to kill these people and all that. Kirk manages to kill the traitor, and now, again, the two planets must find peace. And, of course, Kirk flies off.
Well, this is an interesting one, Leslie, because this is a direct violation of the Prime Directive, because the leader of the Nazis at that time was a Starfleet captain, and he thought that he could get this civilization back up and running using the Nazis as a basis for the whole thing, but not the violence and you know, carnage that the Nazis perpetrated. He was going to skip that, but use everything else they did to get these planets back on their feet again. And that's when the other guy took over and drugged him and whatnot. And Kirk knew this guy. This guy was a friend of Captain Kirk's. He knew him personally. I guess he went to the academy with him or something like that. So when they broke into the chamber and found this drug dude just sitting there, you know, and Kirk intervenes. But this guy had already intervened and violated the Prime Directive in a you know, an awful way. So by Kirk intervening on top of this guy intervening, you know, do two wrongs make a right?
Right. That's what we keep coming back to. Because then the next one, this is the one I was starting to talk about, the Omega Glory. It was that if they beamed down to the planet, they would get this disease, and if they beamed off of the planet, they would die. And this captain thinks he can't beam off of the planet. But it turns out that if you're there for, I don't know if it was a week, or I don't remember the time period, but what Kirk and Spock discover is that if you're on the planet long enough, you build an immunity and you're not going to die. But this captain creates, I think the two groups were called the Yangs and the Khans, which, I don't know, back in the 60s, that would be like the United States and, I don't know, China maybe. Well, I don't remember that Kirk spoke the holy words, and it was the Constitution of the United States.
I think it was the Yankees and the Confederates, the Yangs and the Khans. I think it was the Yankees and the Confederates.
Well, no, they were more Mongolian or Chinese or something.
Because he had the American flag, he had the Constitution, but at any rate.
Yeah, so again, this captain, this bad guy captain, You know, he was busy with the Yangs or whatever they were called, and killing the Khans or whatever. I mean, so again, it was someone else that broke the original Prime Directive, but Kirk breaks Prime Directive to fix it. So we're
and
back
Leslie,
again to do two wrongs, make a right.
I think, if I remember correctly, that was Captain Treacy, and that was another friend of Captain Kirk's that broke the Prime Directive. So, again, you're right. We're right back to the same thing again. You know, the Federation, a Federation captain violated the Prime Directive and set this civilization on a course it wasn't meant to be on. And then another officer from the Federation shows up and breaks that course and tries to set them on a new course. So, you know,
right.
Is that still violating the Prime Directive if the Prime Directive has already been violated?
Right. I don't know if the Federation ever had an amendment or a chapter of what happens if the Prime Directive has already been violated. Is it okay for you to violate it even more so? So actually,
yeah,
we're running out of time. This hour has gone by real quick. I have three more for the original Star Trek. Paradise Syndrome. That's the one with the Indians. Now, the medicine man before the medicine man that is alive in this episode died before he told his son how to make this monolith or whatever you want to call it. It was actually an asteroid deflector. He died before he told his son how to do this. Now, okay, so now if we're talking about the Prime Directive and this asteroid was going to hit the planet and kill everybody, should Kirk or Spock had interfered? I mean,
I believe I haven't seen this episode in a long time, but this is the one with Kirok, and the Indian woman gets pregnant with his child, and they stone her to death. So that whole storyline
right.
with Kirk having his child.
Kirok.
Yes, that's the one.
No, it's one of my favorite episodes.
So, if I remember correctly, the Federation themselves sends the Enterprise there to stop this asteroid. They were on a mission to stop the asteroid from Starfleet, weren't they?
But is that violating the Prime Directive? If an asteroid was going to hit a planet and kill all the people, is that violating the Prime Directive? It's a nasty decision. I mean, I'm just putting it out there. Is that had the Enterprise, had the Federation not existed, the asteroid would have hit this planet and that would have been the end of it.
Right.
But they interfered. I mean, I'm glad they interfered, but did they, you know, violate the Prime Directive?
I think that the minute Kirk and the landing party beamed down to the planet and Kirk was standing there with his communicator and the frequency of the communicator opened up the monolith and sucked him in, and then he fell between those two rods and got his brain zapped and became Kirok. I think at that instant, right there, I think they were beyond coming back from that because Kirk became part of the tribe, and how do you undo that type of interference at that point? I mean, they were in neck deep by that point because Miriam was supposed to marry the medicine man, and she married Kirok instead. She had Kirok's baby instead of the other guy's baby. So that whole non-interference thing went right out the window the minute Kirk got zapped. And I don't know if there's any way to come back from that without really screwing the boots on that one.
Yeah, I mean, he really changed the destiny. Not only was the planet going to end up being destroyed by the asteroid, he messed up the culture because he became the medicine man, and instead of the medicine man marrying Miramani, she marries him.
Right.
So should this planet have been destroyed and that was the end of it? Of course, people are going to say no. We're glad that these people were saved. Time is ticking away here. I got two more. For the world is hollow and I have touched the sky. Again, this was a spaceship that looked like an asteroid. Something went wrong with the computer, and Yanata was going to crash into a planet. Now, if you're not supposed to violate the Prime Directive, should they have allowed the Yanata to hit the other planet, or were they right to interfere and correct the computer?
Well, I think this particular episode is a little bit more than that because, if I remember correctly, McCoy was dying of a rare disease and decided to marry this woman and stay on the asteroid. And the people on the asteroid were not aware that they were actually on a ship. And now, again, they screwed that whole thing up, and they became aware that they were on a ship. So, because McCoy was dying,
I just lost her name. I don't think the people ever really knew, unless she said she was going to tell them. I don't think the civilization ever knew. The high priestess knew at the end of the episode when the computer is trying to kill them. But, again, the whatever you want to call it, the epilogue of the thing is Bones gets cured and Kirk says something like, in 300-something days, the people of Yanata are going to make it to the planet that they were supposed to go to. Would you like, we're going to be in the area. Would you like to go see her?
And they never do.
So the last episode, because believe me, I could probably pick on almost every episode, but the last one is the Cloud Minders. There's a planet that is dying of a disease, and they need this mineral called xenite, and this planet has promised the Enterprise, the Federation, that they're going to have the xenite, except that what the Federation or the Enterprise doesn't know is the miners live on this godforsaken planet while these privileged people live in a city that's up in the clouds. And basically, it's a civil war, if you really want to call it. And what Kirk does is he beams down the head of the guy that runs the city in the clouds into a cave with the head of, who happens to be a woman, a head of the miners. And it's that the gas from the xenites makes you crazy. I mean, where they think that the troglodytes are inferior human beings, it turns out that it's the gases making them crazy. And Kirk has the head guy from the clouds start digging, and he starts getting crazy. anyways, jumping right to the end, is that they realize that it is the gas, and supposedly, again, the series ends, the episode ends, that they're going to talk about it, and Kirk leaves. He gets the Z-Night, and he leaves. So we really don't know if the troglites ever get to go to the city in the clouds and be equal to the people up in the clouds.
Yep, that was typical. I think we still have a lot left to talk about as far as the Prime Directive goes. Yeah.
That was just TOS. That was just the original series. We haven't even touched on any of the other series yet. But, they were all wonderful episodes. I mean, there's some really clunker Star Trek episodes, but even the ones that I talked about tonight, I absolutely love. It's just the question of how far do you carry the Prime Directive?
Right. Well, what do you say we continue this conversation next week? The Prime Directive
sounds
Part
good
2.
To me.
I think so.
Yeah.
And once again, guys, you can visit Leslie at the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Just go on over there and say hello if you have an idea for an episode. Leave it there. We'd love to hear from you guys. Make sure you tune in to Trek Talking with myself, Uncle Jim, GM Chris, Charles, and Eric. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Voyager 7 of 9's Reckoning, issues number 3 and 4 from IDW. And we also have a lot of Star Trek news and birthdays to talk about Thursday night, so you don't want to miss that. And, of course, Leslie and I will be back with the Prime Directive Part 2 next Sunday, same bat time, same bat channel. So please join us for that. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying thank you very much for joining us, no matter where you're listening. We appreciate it. And, of course, we couldn't do the show without the one and only Leslie Hoffman. So thank you so much for joining us tonight, Leslie, and talking about the Prime Directive.
Been fun. It's fun, especially revisiting the original episodes.
And we didn't talk about Planet of the Apes at all.
No. Now, what if there had been a Prime Directive with the Planet of the Apes? What if you had to tell the apes, I'm sorry, you got to start treating the humans equal to the apes? Well, that never would have happened.
No, Dr. Zaius would never allow that.
Yeah.
Well,
so
we
didn't
did
have a Prime Directive.
Nope. Well, we have just about a minute left here, so it's time to say goodnight. I want everybody to be good to each other and stay safe, because we want to talk to you guys again next week. So thank you very much, everybody, and have a very good night. Good night, Leslie.
Night, Jim. Bye.
Hailing frequencies are closed.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.